we're of course coming up to the day of Matan Torah, and before I get into my main theme, I just want to share with you three quickie thoughts from the Maharal. The Maharal wrote, of course, an entire book on the whole process of Matan Torah. That's Tiferet Yisrael, one of the great classic books. And he mentions, again, three thoughts I do want to share with you as a hakdama. The first is, he points out, that although Chazal figure out through very intricate calculations that the Torah was given on either the 6th of Sivan or the 7th of Sivan, and that itself is a machlokas that we'll discuss, the Torah nowhere describes the holiday of Shavuos in terms of it being a day of Matan Torah. We say in our tefillahs, Man Matan Torahsenu, Shavuos in the Torah is exclusively an agricultural holiday. Now, it is true that agriculture is important in all of the Shalosh Regalim, but it's always in conjunction with another thing. So Pesach is both the Chag HaAvir, the ripening of the barley, and the Zman of Cheres, Yitzias Mitzrayim. Sukkos, at least, is connected to the Anoni HaKavod by the translation of the word Sukkah. But Shavuos, there's absolutely no reference to its being celebrated as a Chag of Matan Torah. And the Maharal says very interesting thoughts that's both interesting and a bit disheartening in some ways. He says, it is not possible for God to tell us, be happy on the day that I gave you the Torah. Because whether you should be happy or sad really depends on how you relate to the Torah. Meaning, if a person treats the mitzvot with a sense of zilzul, disrespect, disdain, a lack of enthusiasm and passion, then having the Torah is a burden, not a simcha. The most the Torah could say is, I'll give you a holiday to celebrate the wheat harvest and the bikurim. Whether it'll be a holiday because of Matan Torah depends on you. It doesn't depend on me. I remember years ago when I was a student in Ner Yisrael, so our Rosh Yeshiva used to ask us at the beginning of every Zman, are you going to learn well this Zman? So the typical Yeshiva Bachar answer was, Im Yirtzeh Hashem, if God wills, we will learn well. So my Rosh Yeshiva always responded, God certainly wants you to learn well. The question is not Im Yirtzeh Hashem, the question is Im Tirtzeh Atah. And therefore the Maharal says, whether Shavuot is a simcha of Matan Torah does not depend on God giving us a chag, it depends on what we do. That is point one the Maharal makes. A second point, again quite fascinating, you know, one of the many innovations of the Maharal is a whole theory of numerology. The Maharal, with actually very little makor in Chazal directly, assigns all sorts of significances to different numbers and the like. And let me share with you one thought that he gives about Matan Torah and numerology. There is in Masechet Shabbos. Masechet Shabbos has the few blot of Gemara that talk about Matan Torah and Shavuos. Interestingly enough, in the perek that is called Perek Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva is associated with Torah Shabbal Peh, and that is the Agadata, the main Agadata in Chazal, at least in the Gemara, about Matan Torah. So at the end of the Sugya, there is an enigmatic statement by a Galila, a man from Galil, the Galil, and he says, Barich Rachamana, blessed be Hashem, Diyayavlan, Ayraisa Tulisai, he gave us a threefold Torah, Torah Nevi'im Kesuvim, Liam Tulisai, a threefold nation, Kohanim Levi'im Yisraelim, Biyarcha Tulisai, a third month, Nisan Iyar Sivan, after 3 days of Hagbalah, or at least a third day of Hagbalah, 3 days of preparation. And the Gemara leaves that comment with no commentary, no explanation. It seems to be just a loose observation that, just like in the Pesach Seder, 4 is a very important number, so Matan Torah, 3 is a very important number. But there's no particular explanation of what is the shaychus between 3 and Matan Torah. So here the Maharal develops an important idea, in which he says that the symbolism of the word of the number 3 is 3 represents synthesis and integration of opposite forces. So imagine a triangle, where you have the base of a triangle, and the two points at the extremities of the line, the base, are in opposite directions. But then you can draw a line from those two points to the apex, in which the two lines, or the two points rather, meet at the apex of the triangle. So the Maral says everything about Matan Torah or Torah generally is makushar with the synthesis and integration of opposite forces. How is that so? So on the basic level, we are comprised of the guf and the neshama, or as the Maral's lashon, the chomer and the tzur. But let's keep it simple. We are physical creatures who have physical needs and physical drives, but ultimately our neshama desires dveikus and attachment with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and yet we live in a state in which the needs of the guf seem to be inconsistent with the ability to connect to Hashem. And the more we focus on the guf, the further we are pulled away from Hashem, and then I pull towards God, but then my body pulls me back. There's this push and pull, this constant contradiction and tension and polarity within a person. But what the Torah does is, the Torah gives us a key to integration, because the Torah teaches us that even the physical parts of our lives can be sanctified and elevated and consecrated. And thus, the mitzvos masios are taking the devarim gashmiyim, the gashmiyot of this world, and we elevate it. We eat and we drink, but with birkas hamazon, with brachos, and l'shem shamayim, and everything else, unlike other religions that would teach celibacy as a spiritual virtue. We believe that the marriage and the relationship of husband and wife and the ability to create families is the first mitzvah of the Torah. And again, without getting into that at great length, let me point out that according to the Rambam, the mitzvah of marriage is independent of procreation. And even if, you know, God forbid there will be a childless marriage, which is not necessarily the absolute perfect situation, marriage itself, the relationship of husband and wife, that loving relationship, is in itself a separate mitzvah, and it's something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu desires. This notion of integrating the body and spirit is what the Torah teaches us. The Torah teaches us that we can take the physical of this world, we can elevate it. That is why it is Mekusher to three. Now, in another sense, Torah is integration and synthesis, because it integrates the opposing forces of chesed and gevurah. In the human personality, and this is, of course, a mimicking of the divine relationship to the world, there is the attribute of chesed, of giving, of benevolence, of compassion, and then there is the need for restraint and discipline and withholding. And once again, the world vacillates because God relates to the world sometimes through the open attribute of chesed and sometimes through gevurah, which is not necessarily punishment, but it's more of a concealment and a withdrawal. And in human relationships as well, whether it's parenting or whether it's our relationship with others, we are constantly thinking about this idea, when do I connect and give, and when do I need to focus on my own internal development? Without a Torah, people would tend to either be victims of whatever mood seizes them that morning. This morning I'll be nice, you know, tomorrow I won't. Or you simply fall into a rut in which you become one extreme or the other extreme. But extremes never create truth. One needs a synthesis. And that synthesis is indeed called Tiferes. And that's why in Kabbalah, the first sfira is Chesed, the second is Gevurah, and Tiferes, beauty, is the synthesis. And the Maral says, this is why the Torah is called Tiferes Yisrael, because beauty is the synthesis of opposites. That is what creates harmony in the world, when opposite forces are blended together in a harmonious whole. That is why Tiferes is associated with Yaakov Avinu. Of all of the Avos, we know that Avram represents Chesed, and Yitzchak is the attribute of Gevurah, and also Avoda, because Pirkei Avos says the world stands on Torah, Avoda, Gemilas Chasadim. Avram is Gemilas Chasadim, Yitzchak is Avoda. But Yaakov represents Torah, that is why Chesed alone produces Yishmael, and Gevurah alone produces Esav. It is only synthesis that produces the perfection of an Am Yisrael, where every component, although we had our problems to be sure, but every component has the elevated Kedusha of Kedushas Yisrael. Now, I don't know if John Keats, the British poet, was influenced by Kabbalah, but you may recall the famous line in English literature, truth is beauty and beauty truth. But that is exactly the double designation of the Midah of Tiferes. Tiferes is beauty. It is also connected to Emes. Because beauty and truth is when opposite forces can be synthesized. And this is why the Maharal says that everything connected to Matan Torah is with the magical number 3. And this is a beautiful interpretation of the statement of the Galila in Chazal, that the Torah is connected to the number 3. Derech Agav, I want to share with you another thought the Maharal says elsewhere. And of course, anyone that's been to a Sheva Brachos, either their own or a child or a grandchild or a sibling, whatever, certainly has heard this Gemara. It's one of the most famous Gemaras, and it's used over and over again at a Sheva Brachos, and probably throughout the week it was heard more than once in different Sheva Brachos. And that is the famous Gemara in Yevamos that says that Ish and Isha, right? Ish and Isha, the man has a Yud, the woman has a Hey, that spells the letter of Hashem, Yud Kei. So when the Shechina is in their lives, they're committed to God. So men are doing what men are doing, and women are doing what women are doing. But if you take Hashem out of their lives, out of their marriage, it becomes Ish, the all-consuming selfishness of fire, in which through argument and egotism and selfishness and self-aggrandizement, you destroy the other and destroy yourself. Right? And that's the importance of bringing Hashem into the marriage, and only then there will be shalom. Very beautiful, very true, of course. But the Maharal takes it one step further. If God's name comprises a yud and a hey, why does the man get the yud and the woman get the hey? The woman getting the short end of the stick once again. So the Maharal again has a very beautiful bit of not numerology per se, but looking at the significance of Tzurat HaOsiyot, looking at the significance of the shape of letters. Another feature that he pays attention to, and that is Yud is the most spiritual of the letters of the alphabet because it is the least connected to matter. It's the smallest letter. It has the least Shaychus to Chomer. So it represents the Olam HaNivdal, the world of separation, the world of pure spirituality. Hey, the Maharal suggests, represents a composite letter. Dalit, visualize a Hey. It is both a Dalit, and the left regel of the Hey, the Maharal says, is a Yud. I would have thought of that, but he calls it a Yud. Right. Going with what he says. So here is the idea. Yud represents pure spirituality. Dalit represents the world of Chomer, the world of matter, because matter does exist in 4 dimensions. Length, width, height, and time. So Einstein was not the first person who talked about matter existing in a space-time situation. Maharal was not the first either, but I mean that concept actually goes back to even the earlier Greek philosophers and the like. But the Maharal says if Dalit represents Chomer, and Yud represents the Tzura, the Ruchni, is spirituality, the world of Nivdal. We see an interesting thing. So I'm going to put down men a little bit for a moment. The Maharal says, men tend to get, again, these are generalizations, and I always apologize for generalizations, but he says, men, because of competitiveness and the like, tend to be corrupted by their encounter with the world of physicality. So just as an emphysema patient may have to be on pure oxygen to be able to breathe, so men need the environment of kollel, yeshiva. They need to get away from the world because the world drags them down. So the man has the letter of yud, which represents olam haba, pure spirituality. The woman's great contribution, the Maharal suggests, is that she could bring the yud into the dalit and thereby spiritualize even the physicality of life. And that is a great, great accomplishment. Now, it is true that the gematria of hey is only half of yud, because that does suggest that when I live a life of pure spirituality, I separate myself from the world, I can achieve nirvana, I can achieve all sorts of beautiful, beautiful visions. But ultimately, it's not rooted in the concrete reality of our existence. Life is sometimes boring. Life is sometimes mundane. One is not always going to be living at a high. But the lesson of the hey is the imperative to take the spirituality of Olam Haba and infuse the mundane Chomer of Olam Hazeh, And that is exactly number three, going back to the other other thought of the Maharal, that three is the number of synthesis and integration. Okay, one more thought of the Maharal. This is all, by the way, introduction. I have not begun what I want to talk about tonight. I apologize. Of course, sometimes an introduction is longer than the main talk. You know, the Rambam's commentary on Pirkei Avos is only 5 prakim of Mishnah, and the Rambam's Hakdama is 8 prakim, right? So 8 chapters as introduction to 5 chapters. So this may be the same type of thing here. And that is the following. You know, the korban, the grain offering that is brought on the holiday of Shavuos, are 2 loaves of wheat bread. Now, Chazal already remarked that unlike the korban that is brought on Pesach, which is barley, the korban that is brought on Shavuos is wheat, and that's because barley was commonly fed to animals as animal fodder, and wheat is human consumption, and the lesson is that freedom without Torah is animal freedom. You're just an animal. But when there's Torah and Kabbalah, Tomah, Chashemayim, you have now become human dignity. Well, so that's one difference, barley versus wheat. But there's another difference. That is, the Omer, of course, was matzah. It was not chametz. But not, of course, that's Pesach. That might be obvious. But the truth of the matter is, by and large, the Beis HaMikdash is a chametz-free zone the entire year. The korban minchas, the menachos that were brought, have to be not chametz. The lechem apanim, the showbread, although it's described as chalos, it's not like the chalos, you know, you bake or get in a bakery. It was thick, to be sure. It was really, really thick matzah, really soft, kind of soft, bendable matzah, like Svargim have. Some Ashkenazim are beginning to want that as well. But it had to be matzah, it couldn't be chametz. The only korban sibor, the only communal offering of grain that was chametz, was the shtei halechem of Shavuos. Now I say korban sibor because there's one other instance of chametz when a person brings a korban todah, a Thanksgiving offering, and you bring 40 different, you know, 40 loaves of bread, 30 are matzah and 10 are chametz, so that's a korban yachid, etc. But a korban sibor, the shtei halechem is the only one that's chametz. And that's a little unusual. Why does chametz gain admission, so to speak, on the holiday of Shavuos? So here the Maharal says a very interesting point. Once again, really everything the Maharal says is wonderful. First of all of us know chametz is compared to the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination. It's puffed up, it's arrogant, etc. And normally it's excluded from the holiness of the Mikdash, because we don't want to bring evil into the Mikdash. When it comes to Shavuos, however, evil has a very strong claim to be allowed to participate. The Gemara in Shabbos gives us a story. When Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Shamayim to get the Torah, this is after the Aseret HaDibros, for the 40 days, he's in Shamayim. So the Malachi HaShoresh turn to Hashem and say, how can you give the Torah to these human beings who are going to ruin it, violate it, besmirch it? Keep your holy Torah. Tanah, quoting again, this is explicating verses in Tehillim. Tanah Hotcha L'Shamayim. Let your glory remain in heaven. How can you give this precious Torah to Bnei Adam? And Hashem said to Moshe, give the Malachim an answer, Moshe. Figure something out. And the Gemara gives us a whole very long answer that Moshe gave. But the gist of the answer is that the Torah was designed because we have a Yetzer Hara, we have urges to do things, to kill, to steal. And the Torah is there to teach us how to control our Yetzer Hara. Since the Malachim don't have a Yetzer Hara, they have no need and no purpose for the Torah. So the Maharal says, you can't exclude the Chametz is the Yetzer Hara, right? You can't tell the Yetzer Hara and Shavuos, don't show up. The Yetzer Hara says, hey, you only got the Torah because I'm around. If I'm not around, you wouldn't get the Torah. So how can you kick me out? So in a sense, the Chametz, which is the Yetzer Hara, finds its rectification via the Torah. Therefore, on Shavuos, but after the day of Matan Torah. Actually, these are 3 introductory remarks of Maharal I wanted to share with you. But now, let me go into the main body of my remark. Do I still have time? I hope. And that is the following. The Magen Avraham asks a very, very beautiful, difficult question. And that is the following. We say Good. The Torah didn't say it, but we certainly say that we celebrate Shavuos because Zman Matan Torusenu. And of course, we don't mean the whole Torah, because the whole Torah was given over a period of 40 years. But we mean Aseret HaDibros, that the revelation at Sinai, we say was on Shavuos. And there's a Machi Machlokas in the Gemara. Was it the 6th of Sivan or the 7th of Sivan? Which is very, very strange, because the one that says the 7th of Sivan still kept Shavuos on the 6th of Sivan. But that alone, that question about 6 or 7, one might say, that's not really a problem, because we really don't care if the calendar date was 6 or 7, because that's not how the Torah defines the Moed anyway. The Torah says Shavuos is the 50th day. And indeed, when you didn't have a fixed calendar, depending on whether Nisan and Iyar were 30 or 29, Shavuos could be 5, if both were 30. It could be 6, like if our calendar, one is 30, one is 29. Or it could be 7, if both were 29. So the machlokes, if it was 6 and 7, is not directly a problem, as long as you're celebrating on the 50th day. But here is where the Magen Avraham asks a bumba kasha, as we say. And that is, we can prove conclusively that the Torah was not received on the 50th day of Sfira. The Torah was received on the hypothetical 51st day of Sfira, of course, which there isn't. And that is, the Gemara in Shabbos quotes a brisa that we have a tradition that the Jewish people left Mitzrayim on a Thursday, and the Torah, 7 weeks later, was given on a Shabbos. Now let's figure this out. If they left on a Thursday, that means Thursday was the 15th of Nisan. The first day of Sfira, which is always the second day of Pesach, would be on a Friday. 49 days would take you to Thursday. Friday is day 50. The Torah was not given until Shabbos, day 51. So why do we celebrate Zman Matan Torusenu on day 50, when in fact the Torah was given on day 51? And this is a kasha, by the way, whether you say the Torah was on 6th of Sivan or the 7th of Sivan, because that's just a question of whether the intervening months were Malay or Chaser. But everybody's moda that you got those 51 days from Thursday until Shabbos, and then you have a problem. We are celebrating Shavuos a day early. We are celebrating Shavuos a day before the Aseres HaDibros. It's a very strong kasha. Now, at least in Chutz La'aretz, this is the one thing they get right in Chutz La'aretz. On the second day of Shavuos is the actual day of Matan Torah. The second day of Shavuos is the day of Matan Torah. But the first day, nothing happened. So the Magen Avraham gives the following answer. The Magen Avraham says that the Gemara in Shabbos, at least according to Rabbi Yossi, goes through the different opinions of how many days the Jewish people needed to separate husbands and wives from each other before Matan Torah. And the Gemara concludes that according to Rabbi Yossi, on the fourth day of Sivan, HaKadosh Baruch Hu directed that there be 2 days of separation, on the fourth of Sivan and on the fifth of Sivan. And Hashem was intending to give the Torah on the sixth of Sivan, which would have been Friday. Right, Wednesday, Thursday separation, Friday Matan Torah, but Moshe Rabbeinu determined that they need an extra day of separation, and Moshe on his own initiative added a day to Hashem's decision. I'll try to explain what that might mean, and therefore pushed off the Torah to Shabbos. So the Magen Avraham says it was Hashem's original plan to give the Torah on Friday, and it was only because Moshe Rabbeinu added an extra day that Matan Torah was delayed until Shabbos. So we celebrate Shavuos not on the day that Hashem actually gave the Torah. We celebrate on the day that Hashem would have given the Torah had Moshe Rabbeinu not deferred HaKadosh Baruch Hu's decision. And now, that's pretty amazing. And I don't know if I would tell my children this. In other words, but if you really want to confuse a child, and the child, you know, says, "What happened on Shavuos?" and the child will say, "Hashem gave the Aseret HaDibros," you say, "Wrong. What happened on Shavuos? Nothing happened on Shavuos." Again, it's not, pedagogically, it may not be the best approach to the chat, but still, according to the Magen Avraham, according to Gemara and Shabbos, this is exactly what happened. Because if the Torah should have been given after 2 days of separation, It would have been given on Friday, which is both the 6th of Sivan and 50th of Svira, and it only was given on 51 because Moshe added a day on his own. So we celebrate on God's day, we don't celebrate on Moshe's day. And the Gemara goes on and says, this is not the only time Moshe Rabbeinu added something on his own volition. We know that he broke the luchos later with the Cheder Egel. He broke the luchos on his own volition because he didn't want the Jewish people to be treated as adulterers, so he wanted to kind of break the marriage. And he also separated from his wife. He adopted celibacy on his own volition, and in all of these cases, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was maskint him. Okay, I'll try to explain as we go through this. What's the idea? Hashem says one thing and Moshe Rabbeinu says, I don't think you got it right, Hashem. I want to correct this a little bit. I mean, we'll see how that could work. But nevertheless, the Gemara literally says Moshe was Moses, no matter who does it. But even before we understand what it means that Moshe was Moses, Yomechad Midato, let's ask a question on the basic answer, and that is, why should the hypothetical day that Hashem wanted to give the Torah be celebrated as a chag more than the day that he actually gave the Torah? He didn't give the Torah on Friday. He didn't give the Torah on day 50. He didn't give the Torah on the 6th of Sivan. He gave the Torah on Shabbos, the 7th of Sivan, day 51. Shouldn't actuality trump hypotheticality, if there's such a word, if there probably isn't? Why should Hashem's day be more important than the actual day of Nisina Satan? So here, there are different svarim. The Sefer Emek Yoshua, one of the great Gedolim of the 19th century, offers a very deep and nice explanation of the underlying concept of the Magen Avraham's Teretz. And that is, I'm sure all of you have heard over the years, again, one of the famous Gemaras in Shas, Tanur Shalachnoi. Tanur Shalachnoi literally means the oven that resembles a coiled snake. And this deals with a very technical issue where you have an earthenware oven, and the earthenware oven was cut into horizontal strips like hula hoops. And that way you could transport it from place to place by just carrying the hoops. And then when you wanted to set it up, you would set it up and you would put dry mud or pack mud between the rings to hold it in place. And the machlokas is this: any utensil, earthenware or otherwise, can only receive ritual impurity by a dead animal or a dead person if it's not considered a broken vessel. If it's broken, it's not capable of being makabel tuma. And the machlokas is this type of portable oven treated as a broken entity, which cannot be makabel tuma, or since it is made to be put together and taken apart, it's not broken, that's exactly the way it functions, and it would be makabel tuma. Again, the technical issue is not going to be so relevant for us, but that was a machlokas. So the Gemara recounts that a majority of the sages came to a certain conclusion, but the great Chacham, the great Tana, Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, refused to accede with the majority. And he made all of his arguments, and his arguments were rejected. They rejected his arguments. So, since he was not able to convince them by the force of argumentation, the Gemara goes on, he started calling on Hashem to do miracles to show that he was right. And he said, if the halacha is like me, let the carob tree fly away. And the carob tree flew away. And the Chacham said, we don't listen to trees. It's not really that important. If the halacha is like me, let the river change its course. By the way, those of you from Chicago know that the Army Corps of Engineers actually switched. They reversed around 100 years ago the course of the Chicago River. If the halacha is like me, let the river reverse its course. And the river changed its course. And the Chachamim said, you know, we don't care about rivers. If the halacha is like me, let the walls of the Beis HaMedrash collapse. And the walls began to collapse somewhat ominously, because people are in there. Rabbi Yoshua ordered the walls, don't you dare. And the Gemara recounts that the wall didn't know who to obey, so it remained in a slanting position. That was explaining the architectural anomaly, apparently. There was this old Beis Medrash that had slanting walls, and Chazal had a tradition that it was a result of that story. And the Chachamim said, we don't listen to walls. Well, Rabbi Eliezer then pulls out the big guns, which is what he intended all along, and he said, if the halacha is like me, let there be a voice from heaven, a baskol, saying the halacha is like me. And indeed, a baskol from Shamayim came out and said, the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer, and the chacham said, we don't even listen to you again, because you said in your Torah that you gave to us, lo bashamayim hi, the Torah is not in heaven. The Torah has to be resolved by the chachamim who use their logic and their svara, and they come to a vote in a Sanhedrin or some equivalent body, and you said that the majority decides what the halacha is. You yourself, Hashem, are bound by this. Amazing. And indeed, by the way, although this is an agada, the halachic principle it establishes is absolutely embodied in halacha. Ein mashkichin v'baskol. We do not decide halachic matters by heavenly voices. Now, I do want to add a little thing. One might have thought that the problem with why we don't decide halacha based on baskol is because a baskol could be fake. Like these, you know, ministers come out and say, God told me you're supposed to give me all your money, you know, etc. You know, in other words, there's no transparency in baskol because you don't have logic, you don't have analogy, you don't have precedent. It's just somebody says God spoke to me. But I want to point out, that's not the mashmos of the Gemara. The Gemara doesn't say the Chachamim questioned the veracity of the baskol. Rather, what the Chachamim are saying, somewhat astoundingly, is even if we know 1,000% that it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu telling us the halacha, we don't listen to it. I'll come back to what that could possibly mean. Now, the Gemara goes on. Actually, this story has a bit of an unhappy ending in some ways. And that is, the great Rabbi Eliezer, who was the greatest sage, was put in cheder. He was excommunicated because he refused to accept the decision of the majority. And he was old and sick, and his beloved Talmud, Rabbi Akiva, was instructed to give him the news. And Rabbi Akiva comes into the sickbed, and he stands 4 amos away, because when somebody is excommunicated, you're not supposed to be in his 4 amos. And Rabbi Eliezer at first doesn't really grasp what is going on. And he says, Akiva, why aren't you coming near me? And Rabbi Akiva had to tell him, Kimiduma, it appears to me that your colleagues have separated themselves from you. And Rabbi Eliezer was sobbing. He said, I am like a Sefer Torah that is all closed up and locked up. And what is very interesting is, Rabbi Eliezer's wife was the sister of Rabbi Gamliel, the Nasi, who excommunicated. And the Gemara records an interesting story that Rabbi Eliezer's wife would never let her husband say Tachanun after Shmona Esrei. Because Tachanun is when you pour out your private anguish to Hashem. And she was afraid if he could express his anguish to Hashem in the Tachanun prayer, Hashem would avenge. Hashem would punish her brother. Again, not that Rabbi Eliezer would pray for anything directly, but he would just pour out the anguish in his soul, and Hashem would do something. But one day she thought it was Rosh Chodesh, so she didn't bother to supervise. There's no Tachanun on Rosh Chodesh. But she miscalculated, and she saw him saying Tachanun, and she said to him, you killed my brother. And right that day, right that moment, she got news that Rabbi Gamliel was nifter. Again, a very, very sad story. But to go back to the basic passage in the Gemara, Lo Bashamayim. Now, the Drasha Sarad, one of the great Rishonim, talks about this. What do we do when we try to learn halacha? We try to figure out halacha. And of course, we use human reasoning, we use analogy, we use precedence, we look at the language of Psukim and the language of Mishnayos, whatever we do. But ultimately, we are trying to ascertain what is the will of Hashem in this given situation based on the tools that we have at our disposal. So if HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells you this is my will, we say that's irrelevant? I mean, let's take a trivial example where children are deciding they want to get their Abba and Ima a gift for their birthday. Or Mother's Day or Father's Day. I don't know if Israel observes Mother's Day or Father's Day. So the kids are debating, well, I think Abba likes this more, Ima likes this more. And Abba or Ima says, well, I really like this more. He's like, that's irrelevant. We are debating what it is you like more. So you have a machlokas, and the machlokas is, what does Hashem want us to do in a given situation? And Hashem tells you, and the Gemara is not suggesting that there's some lack of accuracy that is coming from Hashem. So lo bashamayimi, we say to Hashem, what you say you want is not relevant? This is the question of the Drasha Saran. So the Drasha Saran explains something which is a very, very important idea, but it is an idea that can be misunderstood. So we have to keep it among friends here, not necessarily for widespread consumption. And the Drasha Saran says that there's a difference between absolute truth and halachic truth. And he says the following. Halacha is not like mathematics. He was referring to Euclidean mathematics. There is non-Euclidean, which could take a different form. That is, in standard arithmetic, let's say, there is only one possible right answer. 1 + 1 = 2. If your 8-year-old tells you, well, my opinion is 3, at some point we just say, your opinion is wrong. There is a right and a wrong, and a deviation from the right answer is simply incorrect. In halachic truth, we find a different paradigm. When you have a machlokas beshamay and besilam, and these are machlokasim that go to opposite extremes. One says kosher, one says treif, one says tohor, one says tameh, one says patr, one says chayim. And granted, halachically we have to have a view that we follow because we can't do both at the same time. But if we ask ourselves objectively, which one is true, which one is right, the Gemara tells us, Eilu v'Eilu, Divrei Elokim Chayim. They're both right. By the similar to the story of the rabbi that was adjudicating between two people, and one person gave his tainus, and the rabbi said, you're right, and the other person gave their tainus, you're right, and the Rebbetzin said, how can they both be right? You're right too. Everybody's right. How can everybody be right? So the Drasha Saran says, this is the fundamental meaning of Torah Shebal Peh. Torah Shebal Peh never meant that Hashem gave Moshe a specific rule for every single thing that will ever happen to Am Yisrael. What did Hashem say about electricity? What did Hashem say about surrogate mother? What did Hashem say about cloning? What did Hashem say about Obamacare? What did Hashem say about Gilad Shalit? What did Hashem say about Land for Peace? The short answer is, Hashem said nothing at all about those issues. But Hashem gave Moshe Rabbeinu klomim, principles, yesodos, foundational techniques, the 13 midos Torah Nidreshes Bahem. And out of those principles, he then authorizes the Chachamim in every generation to take the principles of Hashem's Torah and apply them to the ever-changing scenarios of life. The Torah is eternal and the Torah is perfect, but life changes. And Torah Shebal Peh was not a list of 10 trillion rules in which Hashem gave a specific answer to every question. Hashem gave the foundations and the methodology out of which every question can be resolved. But he then leaves it to the Chachamim to resolve it. And essentially, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, as long as these are duly qualified Chachamim, and I realize that I'm glossing over a big, big issue here, and as long as they are faithful to the methodology of the process that Hashem gave Moshe Rabbeinu, and again, that needs more definition. Whatever conclusion they come up with is blessed with the imprimatur of earthly divine truth, even if Hashem would have calculated in a different way. And therefore, the meaning of Lo B'Shamayim is this. There is indeed a transcendent heavenly truth, but the truth that Hashem wants to be applied in Am Yisrael and in this world is the truth that is arrived by the Chachmei HaTorah using and rooted in the klolim that Hashem gave to Moshe. So even when they get it wrong, they get it right. Now, the Mishnah specifically says that's the case in Kiddush HaChodesh. Even if the Sanhedrin sanctifies the wrong day for Yom Kippur, but it's true in all matters of halach, that as long as the methodology is followed by duly authorized chachamim, again, I'm glossing over a big, big issue, HaKadosh Baruch Hu blesses the result. And that's why it's possible, Eilu Ve'eilu Divrei Elokim Chayim, because both Meshami and Beis Hillel utilized the klolim of Torah Sheba'al Peh. So whatever they come up with, Hashem says is emes. On the other hand, and when there's a rule that the majority decides, then even if they get it wrong, Hashem says that's the emes that I want to apply. Which means, if this is all the Drashas Aran, this is not me. The Drashas Aran says, if the idea would be Hashem gave a specific ruling on every question, and then we're just trying to reconstruct what that was, then indeed it would be impossible for both opinions to be correct. But if we understand halachic truth is the culmination of a process, then it is possible to have two mutually exclusive results to be considered to be divine emes, and lo b'shamayim, even if mathematically they get it wrong, so to speak, halachically it is still considered to be a valid psak halacha. This is what the Drashas Aran says. This is the meaning of both Eilu Ve'eilu Divrei Elokim Chayim, and this is the meaning of lo b'shamayim. Now you may ask, why does Hashem give the Torah in such a crazy way? Why couldn't Hashem give us the Torah with a specific ruling on every specific question? Now you may answer, they wouldn't understand. Thousands of years ago, give them a ruling about cloning, they wouldn't know what's going on. So Hashem could have given Moshe Rabbeinu a bunch of envelopes etched in stone, saying, do not open up. Okay. Progressive revelation is quite a controversial idea. You can have that form of progressive revelation. Open up this envelope, Tafshin, Samach Dalet, land for peace, Gilad Shalit, nuclear war, whatever it is. Hashem will give us an answer. Why is Torah Sheba'al Peh filled with machlokas? I mean, you open up a Mishnah, you open up a Gemara. How many lines do you get to read before you hit the first machlokas? Well, you get one line. Amos I call it. Question? Three opinions already. So much machlokas. Why? The answer is, this is the greatest sign of God's love for us. Let's imagine you want to make a cake for your child. So the easiest and most efficient way to make the cake is that when your child is sleeping or at nursery, make the cake, it'll take 20 minutes, it'll be fine. But part of how you show a deeper love to your child is to involve them in the process of creation. Share with them. Bring them in. Yes, the kitchen will be a mess. There'll be sugar on the floor and chocolate on the counters and eggshells in the batter. And the cake will be lumpy and uneven. Part of it will be overburned because it's too thin, and part of it will be underbaked because it's too thick. You could have done a much better job without them. But the love is in the relationship. I am not being irreverent when I describe Torah Sheba'al Peh as messy. It is messy. It is full of questions, debates, possibilities, hypotheses that lead you to blind alleys. And then you got to retrace your paths. That's what Gemara is in the Sitter. And all halacha, even a sacred halacha that gives you final rules, is really the outcome of that messy process. Why couldn't Hashem just give us the answer? The answer is, He wanted to make the cake with us. And the cake that He makes with us is a lot messier than the cake He could have done on His own. But out of His love for Am Yisrael, He is mishatef us in the creation of Torah. That is why Yitzhak Yochanan, actually he says a similar idea, Yitzhak Yochanan Spector, writes in Akdamah one of his Svarim, an interesting Gemara in Brachos. The Gemara in Brachos says on the Pasuk that we recite, whenever we returned the Torah to the Orim. Pasuk in Mishlei. Ki lekach tov nasati lachem. I have given you a good purchase, something to take with you. Torasi al tazovu, do not forsake my Torah. So the Gemara in Bracha says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not like a basar v'dam. A basar v'dam, if I have to sell a precious legacy because I'm short of cash, and I have to sell something that's very dear to me, I'm going to be sad. Mocher asev. Mokeach sameach. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu ain't okay. Even though he gave away the Torah, he still rejoices. Shavit Zalchanin says, the Gemara's analogies are non-secular. When I sell something, I don't have control over it anymore. Hashem didn't sell the Torah. He commanded us to keep the Torah. Answer, no. Hashem gave away the Torah to a large degree. Lo b'shamayim. He put us in charge of the process. You can imagine a little bit, it's like the fear that a parent has when you finally entrust your child with their car keys or something. You know, it's like, you know, you're worried, will he or she be able to carry out this responsibility? But you realize that part of your job as a parent, whether in driving or some other context, is you've got to entrust the keys to the child, even though at this stage you can do a better job. Hashem put us in the driver's seat with him. That's lo b'shamayim hi, that's elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim, and that is Hashem is the mocher, and we are the lokeach, as it were. By the way, just as a little aside, I have been emphasizing tonight the idea of machlokes, ambiguity, of a difficult process that Hashem wants us to take His klalim and work with them instead of giving us answers. It's interesting that the Chafetz Chaim once went to see Rav Chaim Brisker in Brisk, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, and Rav Chaim was finishing mincha, and before the Chafetz Chaim got a chance to talk to him, a balabayas just came off the street and just threw out a loud question. Says, Rebbe, how come there's so much machlokas in Shas? Everything's machlokas. So Rav Chaim Soloveitchik looked at him. Rav Chaim had big, big eyes, piercing eyes. In fact, the Brisker Rav said that Rav Chaim wore glasses because his eyes were so big and scary that people were scared to look at his face, so he had to have glasses to cover his eyes a little bit. And Rav Chaim looked at the person and said, you're wrong. For every machlokas in Shas, there is that's a tip of the iceberg. There are so many assumptions that people agree upon, that the Gemara doesn't articulate, which is really very fascinating. Because if you have a machlokas about a sukkah that's more than 20 amos, that presupposes sukkah, etc. So Rav Chaim says, the Gemara doesn't articulate all the common assumptions of halakha, which are many times more. This is what Rav Chaim said, like after 1 minute. The Chafetz Chaim met with Rav Chaim, and then on the way back to Radin, which was like a 4-hour train ride, the Chafetz Chaim was lost in thought. And after a few hours, the Chafetz Chaim said, you know, Rav Chaim is right. And the way the story is interpreted, Rav Chaim went through all of Shas in 1 minute and was able to determine that every machlokes has a bunch of unarticulated common assumptions. The Chafetz Chaim went through Shas in 2 hours and came to the same conclusion. He said, Rav Chaim is really a guy. Okay. So that's just to show you that one shouldn't overemphasize machlokas, because there also is a great, great deal of commonality in assumptions as well. Okay. So now, if we understand, let's segue back to Shavuos. If we understand that the ultimate meaning of Matan Torah is not simply the commandments that God gave us to keep, but that Hashem entrusted us with the interpretive tools to apply the Torah to reality, and Hashem defers to the Chachmei HaTorah, even if in some objective sense they get it wrong, let's ask ourselves, what is the first example of that happening? It happened Friday morning on the 6th of Sivan, that was the 50th day of the Omer, when it was Hashem's original intention to give the Torah, and Hashem didn't give the Torah because Moshe Rabbeinu determined that an extra day of preparation was necessary. Ein lecha matan Torah gadol mizeh. The giving of the Torah was an act of omission, not an act of commission. The fact that Hashem, in deference to Moshe Rabbeinu's position, did not give the Torah on the day that he was planning on giving it is in itself the greatest Matan Torah. So I go back to the surprising answer, what happened on Shavuos? Nothing. The nothing was the Matan Torah of Hashem deferring to Moshe Rabbeinu's Hachra'a Lo Hashemayim. You know, there was a famous Supreme Court justice, Robert Jackson, who was also the chief prosecutor at Nuremberg. He took a leave of absence from the Supreme Court to be the prosecutor at the Nuremberg war trials. And Robert Jackson, Mahavir, once remarked about the Supreme Court of the United States, and he said, the Supreme Court is not final because it is infallible, but it is infallible because it's final, meaning you have nowhere else to go. Now, for different reasons, and for much holier and deeper and spiritual reasons, a similar point can be made about the Chachamim. It's not that the Chachamim are final because what they say is right, but rather, since Hashem said their Hachra is final, it becomes right, even if in a sense it was not correct. And that is really Hashem's love for Am Yisrael, and this is the meaning of the Pasuk in Tehillim, at least allegorically. Emes me eretz tismach. Truth springs from the earth. This was Hashem's will, that Hashem did not want Emes to be exclusively coming from the Shemayim. He wants us to be co-creators of the process. So this is the deep meaning of Matan Torah. And this is, again, I've elaborated somewhat, but this is how people understand the Magen Avraham, why we celebrate the Yom Tov of Shavuos, not on the day of the Aseres HaDibros themselves, but on the day that Hashem would have given the Aseres. Now, one little point, though, that you may still be a bit perturbing us, and that is, well, I understand how this works when the Chachamim erroneously interpret Hashem to mean one thing and it really means something else, so Hashem goes with it. But here, Moshe Rabbeinu seems to be adding to Hashem. And what gives him that right? So the truth of the matter is, without getting into too much detail, if you actually learn the Gemara is very, very clear in Masechet Shabbos, that the meaning of Moshe Mosif Yom Echad Midato does not mean he thought Hashem meant 2 days and Moshe said, I'm going to make it 3. Rather, you see from the context of the Gemara that Moshe mistakenly interpreted Hashem's words to mean 2 full days, which would therefore mean Wednesday was only a part of the day, so it's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So the Gemara is telling us, therefore, this was not an example of Moshe consciously deviating from the Almighty. This was a matter of Moshe misinterpreting Hashem's tzibur. And Hashem basically said, if that's how you see it, I am going to go with you. Now, all of this may seem very theoretical, very ethereal. Does this apply to us, so to speak? I mean, we're not the ones, you know, who are interpreting the Torah and applying it in different situations. This seems to be the role of Gedolei Hador, and of course, in matters of halacha, it certainly is. But I think it does highlight the idea that to what we call in Kabbalah, Zeir Anpin, in microcosm, this is really a process all of us are invited to participate in. Hashem wants us to bring our creativity, our thoughts, our individuality, to try to extract from the words of the Torah a meaning, a principle, a certain relevance. Every person has a chelek in the Torah, a unique chelek. The way the Zohar expresses it, every person has a letter in the Torah, every neshama. It says there are 600,000 neshamos, basic neshamos, that's Am Yisrael. There are 600,000 letters in the Torah. Big question, of course, is only around 325,000, which is a pretty big margin of error, but they say the Zohar works with composite letters, like Hayes could be Dalet and Vav, like the Maral's, or Dalet and Yod. But be it as it may, every person has their chelek in Torah, and that is the meaning of the tefillah, the same chelkenu of the Torah Sechah. Show us our portion. So sometimes, you know, you hear people say things, people say thoughts, and people say insights, and someone says, Which paper says that? And, you know, within reason, one has to know and one has to be humble and modest, but within reason, it's okay to have your own thoughts. It's okay to say, this is what the Torah seems to be saying to you. You have to be very careful that it's not keneged chazal, it's not keneged mesora, certainly it can't be keneged halacha. But within those parameters, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants Am Yisrael to connect to the Torah, not only by receiving what others say, but by finding within oneself an inner meaning of the text and what it might say to you and how it applies to your life and life. And this is the chelek in which we too are creators of Torah, along with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, obviously Gezeirah Rampin in a much, much more reduced way. And this is the significance of Matan Torah, not that only Hashem commanded us to keep the Torah, but Hashem actually gave us a certain ability to look at the Torah using Hashem's principles and extracting the truths that may apply to us. So I want to wish everybody a Chag Sameach, and indeed may we have a Kabbalah HaTorah with Abbas HaTorah, Abbas Hashem, Abbas Yisrael. Have a good night.